Good evening, Unyona, and welcome to Matushka's Right Peg. Now, when I was thinking about this podcast, I did start to wonder, is the season about to slightly peter out? And is this podcast going to become slightly less attractive or even more unattractive than it once was? Thankfully, at least we have two loyalists in the studio to the podcast. Kyle, as ever, hailing in from Scotland, and Mark, on the ground in Berlin. Welcome, gentlemen. I think Baz Timmers is on the way. He's battling Deutsche Bahn and making his way to a hotel, but I'm fully expecting him to come and give us his pearls of wisdom, especially as we look at life outside of Union in the wider Bundesliga. We haven't really talked about the fan protests, but I'm sure that Baz, as someone who does like to talk about the wider issues, not only in football, but in life, will be able to update us on that and, give us his thoughts. But first up, let's have a look back. So when we were in the podcast studio last time, I think there were a few people who may have said, Hoffenheim, probably likely to go and get a result there and then screw it all up in the other games. Pretty much as how it's gone, really. Be interested, Kyle, what your thoughts are initially on the very bizarre Hoffenheim game. I mean, it was like watching kind of old school football. Challenges were flying in, sort of ludicrous sendings off, but a good result nonetheless, right?
Absolutely, it's particularly this season to go away anywhere and get a result is huge. And you know, Hoffenheim, for the bad run of form they were in at the time, you know, since then stabilised a bit, and now they're back fighting for Europe. They're sitting in that seventh spot that depends on Leverkusen winning the cup if it's a European spot next year. It was just one of those sort of daft games. The Volland sending off was ridiculous. I still can't comprehend how they came to the second yellow in particular. The first yellow soft because it's a bit of chat, whatever. But the second one, it seemed like the referee was desperately even up the players on the pitch. You know, he doesn't even make the foul anyways. It's the other player, I forget who it was, that makes the foul. But look, a bit of character building performance, I thought. You know, Aronson, great to see him off the mark, and a fantastic goal, and a great assist from Vertessen, and just a good counter-attack, and something that Union were fantastic at in seasons gone by, but maybe not so much this year.
Just before I bring Mark in on the Hoffenheim sort of quagmire game, you mentioned Aronson. I think that's an interesting one. Is it fair to say that we're maybe starting to see a little bit sort of the I wouldn't say the best of him, but we're certainly seeing a player now who has he had that kind of different treatment from a new manager? He seems to be, yeah, probably the player that maybe the people who signed him thought he might be.
Definitely. He's obviously come, and you know, we had at the start of the season him getting dogs abuse off Leeds fans and that for whatever reason. Supposedly there is some bitterness because he left them after they got relegated, which I can understand, but at the same point, you know, that was a terrible lead side, and I'm not exactly sure it was his fault alone. It's a player that I would like to see stay because he offers something that no other player in that team can do. He's got that sort of ability that no other player in that team has, in our team has. I think the sort of the dribbling ability and stuff like that. And yeah, he definitely needs to harden up a bit. I don't think anyone's disagreeing with that, but that's something you can work on. That's something you can sort out. And yeah, let's see. Like I said, someone I would definitely like to stay about.
Yeah, like you said, I think there's part of his game where he does need to maybe get that upper body strength, and that's just something that as a professional needs to probably work on. And yeah, get a little bit better at the ugly side of his game. But I will come on later on to one of the fouls against Aronson, and it was a foul against Dortmund that was just absolutely waved away. But that is another issue, and one that I will be very keen to bring everyone in on. But yeah, Mark. The Hoffenheim game seemed, as Kyle says there, I mean, it was a nice counter-attack goal. We sort of ground out the result. It was almost the union of yesteryear, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think Union of yesteryear is where we're slowly going at the moment. I'll come to a more deeper theory of this in the later on in the podcast when we discuss the signings and how they've had an impact and what the idea behind them was and how they're getting on. I've got more on that later, I would say. But I mean, Aronson is one of those players who I wouldn't really over egg the pudding just because he scored. He showed a significant regression when rewarded for the Hoffenheim game against Heidenheim. He was put in the starting 11, and admittedly maybe not in a position that he would be most comfortable with. But in fairness, you have to say he took his goal well. He played well against Hoffenheim, as did the vast majority of the team, with one notable exception, and that is, and I must agree with the sentiments of Kyle, if not the end result. Kevin Folland, silly lad again. He's shown it once before with that senseless leg breaker tackle that he did under absolutely no pressure earlier on in the season. He's shown that he's got this weird streak in him, and in this situation, he's had a bit of a go with Nsoki. He's got the best of it because Nsoki's been sent off, and then you've got literally 3 minutes maximum, 3 minutes to go to get through to half time. In those 3 minutes, you stand up your man, you don't touch anything, you keep it buttoned, you say nothing, and the team goes into the break one man up, and can rejig and go for the win in the second half. Ironically enough, though, going down to 10 men probably bolstered us and led to the tactical change that eventually got the results. So weirdly enough, it all worked out, but he's got to cut this out with these stupid things. It's absolutely unnecessary. The final goal, really, really nice. Vertessen come to him again later. Looks like a really good player. I like him. He's got a really good touch. I like the way that he's very direct. His head's up. He goes for the. He goes heads with purpose towards the goal. And yeah, a lovely finish at the end, and a very, very, very important 3 points.
Yeah, Vertessen showed glimpses in that game of probably what we want to see. Someone, as you say, goes directly towards goal. I think the shot that he had as well, I think, just sort of got stuck under his feet a little bit in that. I think it was that game. Baz, you've been traversing Germany, you've battled Deutsche Bahn, and you've made it to the podcast. So first of all, well done, because that's not easy in this time of year. How did you find the Hoffenheim game?
Well, thanks for the congratulations, but I only made it halfway. I still have to get back. So I actually had to rejig my travel back one day earlier than planned because of the next strike. The Hoffenheim game. Well, just looking at the scores, you'd say that the old Union is back. I'd almost say that we are bringing the art back a bit into Union, although we probably didn't have a lot of art before, unless you count Matuška's right back as art. But Mark already mentioned Vertessen, who has a great touch. Aronson, yeah. He might be too light, but he's actually somebody who's actually comfortable with the ball. We have Schaefer back after, you know, his feet problems. So we have a lot of players who can actually create something out of nothing. And we saw that against Hoffenheim with, well, at least with the deciding goal. And I think we saw it last weekend as well, although not everything gelled together. But we have become a bit more unpredictable. We are slowly getting more comfortable with the ball. And that looks like we are getting some of the jigsaw puzzles back together again. I don't think that the puzzle is completely broken, which we all thought it was like 3 or 4 months ago. I'm not sure whether everything will fit together. Definitely under this coach, that's a big question mark. But I think the Hoffenheim game showed that we're moving into the right direction.
Yeah, picking up on what you said, Mark, I think it's completely true that if Hoffenheim had been down to 10, had come out and we'd had all our players on the pitch, they strategically would have played a very, very different game. I think their tactics would have been probably much more negative, probably would have given us a lot more of the ball. And that kind of counter-attack goal at the end, where, in fairness to both teams and both managers, both teams went for the win. Nobody was sat there going, let's take a nil-nil here. Both teams were really going for it. Although it was kind of, in some ways, terrible to watch in terms of quality, it was superb entertainment. And that's sometimes what you want to see, especially when you win 1-0 and you score whatever it is, 6 to 10 minutes from the end, depending on how you calculate all that injury time. But good performance. And I mean, you go into the next game against Heidenheim, and the last thing you want to do is concede after 3 minutes, I guess. So Union, true to form, let's give them the head start. I really didn't think that we were going to go in 2-1 up 5 minutes from the break. Heidenheim obviously won up, but we turned that round. And then I'm not really sure what happened in the second half. I'd be interested in what you guys made of that. Mark, I mean, that second half performance and, I mean, the game in general, really 2 points dropped, right?
Looking at it in a more global sense against Heidenheim, you would have to say, yes, probably 2 points dropped. But on the other hand, having an amazing season this year. And there's players there that are playing above and beyond themselves. So must be given credit there to the to Frank Schmidt and the whole team down Heidenheim, like on a really top job. And in that sense, we saw an uncharacteristic mistake from Kevin Falk, the first one that he's actually made since he's come in. But as a good pro, he didn't seem to let it affect him too badly. The two goals that we scored were amazingly timed. If you do score two goals and go in complete, well, not exactly against the run of play, but in a what was by all accounts an awful game, then would you expect? Would you hope to hold out against Heidenheim? You would like to think so, but unfortunately, another mistake, another defensive lapse. Led to the equaliser. It's a shame. Ultimately, I would say 2 points dropped there.
And just to pick up on the mistake by vote. So, my understanding was after the game, there was discussions around is that mistake the manager's fault because he was playing him slightly out of position, or is it the player's fault? Where do you stand on that one?
To be honest, I think that. I think that he's an experienced enough defender to be able to play anywhere along a back three. I think it was just a really poor decision. It was just a really poor header. That you shouldn't be making that header as a defender, full stop. Doesn't matter if you're in the middle, left or right. It was. I don't think you could really lay that on Bielitsa's door, personally.
No, I mean, you'd need some neck muscles to propel that ball the way it was, 40 yards back to your keeper from there. And that was the only other person that was on. So, not sure I think we can blame the manager there. But some people were in the hierarchy pointing their finger at him, which is, again, pretty strange, I must say. Kyle, the Heidenheim game, how did you see that one?
Yeah, the first goal, it's just head the ball out of play. Like, you know, let everybody get back into the game and that. It's yeah. And I'm Rooney coming out and blaming Bielitsa for that. You know, it's very clear I'm maybe not Bielitsa's biggest fan. I think with the benefit of hindsight, the creation Neil Warnock was maybe a bit too far, given Neil Warnock's managed to make Aberdeen worse and they'll fight relegation now. But yeah, it's a tough one. Like, but this is, even the best on your own teams are prone to an absolute brain fart like that. This is what happens. It's unfortunate that it's happened twice in the same game. The second one is probably a bit more coachable, the second goal, because how are we creating 2-on-1 situations when we're in the lead? There's no excuse for that. Be a bit more pragmatic, particularly given that we haven't beat Heidenheim since what, 2016, something like that. Yeah, like, you know, it's not like we haven't played them a lot. Yeah, not since promotion, but there's seasons before that where we hadn't beat them. The goals, though, you know, great opportunism for both of them, and it was, you know, it's definitely 2 points dropped, and you know, I can't say for definite if it, if you know, maybe we deserved that on the crux of the 90 minutes, because I was occupied watching Scotland beat England in the rugby, so I thought I'd get the mention in, but.
Oh, have you? Hope you enjoyed that strange egg chasing sport that none of us watch that, really, do we? Me and Mark, the English people, wouldn't really know anything about it, would we? Cough, cough. Moving on to the Dutchman, Baz. One thing that I would say, actually, and did we deserve more out of that game? I'm not sure, actually, because we had 3 shots on target at home against Heidenheim. Yeah, they only had 4, but it was 2-all at the end of the day. Our creativity at home is really lacking in games like that, and it was a tough watch, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know what it was like in the stadium, but well, apart from being probably a long watch, but it was a tough watch.
Well, we've set the benchmark pretty low. If I go back to the Cologne home game, for instance, and I think we've had a couple that were even worse than this one, but. Yeah, we really had to fight our way back into this one, and we didn't play well. It's funny because what you say is actually right, I guess, Mark. We tend to say that we lost points because we focus on the defensive mistakes that we made in that game. Yeah, you could say that, but you could also say like we only had 3 shots on goal. The Schaefer one was a very lucky one because it got deflected as well. And this was one where Heidenheim gave us the ball, except for the first 5 or 10 minutes, and let us show our creativity, which, well, at the moment we don't really have, or it doesn't all fall together, actually, to be brutally honest. So yeah, I could kind of live with the 1 point in that game. Kyle, you said we haven't played them for years. Small correction. Last year in the cup, we beat them at home. And I actually thought that it was one of our best home games of that season. We were completely in control. We had a game plan. It never felt like they would have a chance. And the Bielica ball, as it's sometimes called, is a bit wilder. There's more tactical variation, but sometimes it's also, it looks like no one really knows what they have to do. You know, the automatisms, the patterns, they're gone. And Runert coming out afterwards is just weak. I mean, it's almost like Bielica just happened to him, although he's pretty much very much responsible for appointing him as a manager. So I don't think that it's very classy to do that, to put it mildly.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly zero class, and not really how you should be conducting business, irrespective if we take on board what I think Cherry said in the last podcast, that he is a bit of a stopgap manager. But I think the way that you treat people throughout his tenure is pretty key. And yeah, we might not be as big as fans, but You could see from that Heidenheim game in the team selection. I mean, we've got plenty of players on the pitch there who are creative. You've got Aronson, you've got Juranovic, you've got Schaefer, you've got Gerzens. It's not like we're just putting out a team of workmen, like sort of grinding out a result either. It just feels that, I think, as you say, Baz, it doesn't feel like those automations are there and people are that comfortable in maybe the positions that they're in. So let's fast forward to the game against Dortmund. I mean, we were talking off air about it wasn't really a 2-0, which I think is probably fair from what I saw. I have to confess, I only saw the second half, so I probably didn't see everything that you guys saw. But Baz, you're a short walk from the stadium, I understand, these days. So no big transport chaos for you either. I know a few people had problems getting to and from the ground on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, result aside, how did you see that one?
I think it was a perfect display of what was missing, because we were pretty good, I think, in the first 30 minutes. Got the ball in dangerous positions, had a lot of crosses in. The crosses weren't always of high quality. But, and that is like a big riddle for me, is like, what is the big idea with just playing Volland and Hollerbach up front? We don't really have a central striker. And if there was one game where that was on full display, it was last weekend. We had so many dangerous situations, and Hollerbach is just not a center forward. Volland, maybe in his Leverkusen days, used to be, but now he has to come from afar. And it just really looks like we haven't worked out that part yet. I said to someone on the stands last Saturday, like, it looks like we've been training everything except for the last 20 yards and how to actually score a goal. And then from the first 30 minutes on, everything just went against us. A couple of really, really, really good saves of Renault keeping us at a 0-0 draw. Until that, I mean, pretty impressive goal of Adeyemi. And in the second half again, we just didn't manage to play a lot of attacks until the end and get a lot of really, really clear chances. I think the biggest one was of Volland, which was also the result of some sloppy defending of Dortmund. And we didn't play bad, but there were also like a lot of passes also, like Schaefer was absolutely atrocious in the second half, that I think didn't justify us getting a result last Saturday, and which gives me a small question mark, like, where do we go from here, and are we that stable that we're not going to get into trouble anymore? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see what Mark and Kyle think on that one. Are we safe, or could we get sort of sucked back in? That's probably a conversation for after this analysis of the Dortmund game. But Kyle, what did you think about the game? I mean, we didn't deserve to get beat 2-0, right?
No, I don't think so. I think we were probably the better side in over the course of the game. Their first goal comes from that moment of magic that you have when you're able to spend millions upon millions of players on players. That is a ridiculous goal. And we don't really have a player in our side that can do that. And nor really should we. You're saying about having a striker, you know. We badly need one. Hollerbach's not a striker. Volland is not the striker he used to be. Even thinking in terms of this season, I would have liked to, obviously it's if, buts and maybes, but I would have liked to see Fofana playing in the team now that we're set up and we're competent in the other in midfield and defence. That, you know, what an actual striker with a bit of a presence and some pace and sort of he would have supply that he really didn't have during the spell. But it's not to be, that's for Rooney to deal with in the summer. There we're probably unlucky not to score. We've created some good chances, and it's just not having that finisher to finish them off. Runu, as always, was stellar, and their second goal, how VAR has looked at that and was like, that's not a foul. It's ridiculous. It changes nothing. It really changes nothing in the context of the game, of course. And Juranovic probably should play the ball a bit quicker, but that's a foul. Like, every day of the week, that's a foul. Baz is disagreeing. I don't know. I think that should have been blown up, but at the end of the day, it changes nothing. Dortmund was, even this Dortmund side that really seems to not be able to buy a win, again, apart from against us, it was one of those three hit games, and you know, they were probably due a win at the Alta Försvarsarena against us. We've had some good luck against them over the past few years, and I guess we'll just get them next season.
Yeah, we certainly have over the past few years at home done exceptionally well against a team, as you say, with those resources. I will before I bring Mark in harp on about the ref, because there was a foul on Aronson, which it was just basically a massive shove, pushed him to the ground, and yes, he's a lighter weight guy, but again, blatantly a foul. And you see these types of fouls now, and this is not just an Union thing; it's not even just a Bundesliga thing, actually. Because I mean, if you want to take sort of the very sort of soft type of fouls that you now see people get away with, the Kyle Walker foul. Which even he was smirking about after the game. He knows what he's done. He's put his arm across him. He's pushed, I think it was Rashford, to the floor in the Manchester derby. There seems to be so many now where you can do a bit of shoving, and there's this tendency for referees just to try and keep the play flowing. And you see it all the time. And you see, especially when you've played football, you can see the sly foul versus one where it is just a coming together. And I felt the referee was, I thought he was really poor actually in the second half that I saw. And this is for both sides. I thought there was a number of clear fouls that he just kept missing and waving on. But ultimately, I'll let you guys tell me, Baz, if you agree with Kyle's assessment on the second goal and whether that was a foul. But Mark, from what you saw in that first half, Are there shoots of kind of recovery and green shoots that we can cling to about the performance? Or are you quite worried, as Baz is saying, about kind of getting sucked back into a real, genuine relegation battle?
Oh, I think the roots, the green shoots of recovery have started long time ago. We've four games, four wins on the spin. My issue is not necessarily whether the green shoots of recovery are there. My issue is how tall does the tree eventually grow? Because this is what ultimately we have to look at with Bielitsa as our manager. But that's maybe for a different section of the podcast. I think that what the Dortmund game showed was the qualities that all Uniona love to see in their team are coming back and were at the fore. It's not particularly attractive, but there's something about winning the ball in midfield and giving it off, or just getting the break from a nice hard tackle and then passing it down the wing that gets the blood pumping. There were several people that did excellently in the middle of the park. I thought Toussaint is showing really what we bought him for. He's a really good player, and I think people thought that his career was done after that horrific dive in Europe, but he's proving that he's got it now. He's proving that he's getting it. Schaefer at Football Week in Berlin said in their ratings that it looked like he spent the 15 minutes before the kickoff with his hand inside an electrical socket. That was what they decided. That was what they classified it as. And it was true. He was absolutely running around all over the place. Now, as we've seen in football, that running around might do a lot, but it doesn't get you. It doesn't win you trophies all the time. And ultimately, his final ball, what was quite poor on occasion. On another day, he would have had a lot more luck, a lot more outcome if he just settled down a little bit and did and looked at what he was doing first. But ultimately, these are the things that decide a game. But we can't argue about. Renault was man of the match for us, which tells it all. He made some fantastic saves. Dortmund, the better team, quality-wise, they maybe lost out in the tackle a few times, but they had ultimately better quality in the transition, especially between the midfield and up front. They had a clear game plan, an outstanding goal as well by Adeyemi, helped not least by Roussillon and Schaefer, but predominantly Roussillon, just not having the legs to get back on time from one of his lung-busting runs up front. Ultimately deserved, but ultimately annoying. I think we could have maybe squeezed a point in there, but I have no issues about the result itself. Also got no issues about the second goal. That I think is it's not a foul. I wouldn't have been complained if it was given. It's one of them ones, but Juranovic has to be stronger there for me. Regarding the overall overriding issue that you said about the change in tactics and change in fouls that you see, I have no problem with either possibility of a ref being very over-officious and whistling everything or letting a game flow. I have no problem as long as he remains consistent across the entire 90 minutes. And the rest we will see.
Thank you, Mark. And I know a lot of people, especially in our wider WhatsApp group outside of the podcast, do enjoy the Lauf Leistung stat. And as Mark says, I think we did return to the Union of old and won a few challenges, put the boot in a little bit in that game, which is always pleasing and gets people adrenaline going. We outran Dortmund there by around... almost 3 kilometres. So we are back to running around a lot. The only problem is, Baz, are we running around like headless chickens or do we have a game plan?
I'm still not sure of that. I think actually we do have a game plan, but we have several game plans. And we've seen at least several home games where we've switched formations several times and players were looking to the side to Bielica like, what the hell is this? And what do we have to do now? We do seem to have reverted to like three central defenders. That is beyond any discussion, but anything ahead of that, in front of that, is up for grabs, depending a bit on the situation of the game as well. You know, sometimes we have no problem taking almost all strikers off just to defend a 1-0 lead. Sometimes we go all in. The only thing that doesn't seem to happen is that we're going to play with a central striker for more than 15 minutes, which is still kind of a riddle to me. You could say that it gives us a bit more flexibility and we're more difficult to predict, but I'm still not sure whether the team is that far and that stable yet. And it's not that we don't have any strikers, by the way, because Kyle said that Runet has to solve it in the summer window. But he got Bedia a couple of weeks ago, who was one of the top strikers in Switzerland, who apparently still has to get used to our level. We got Mikkel Kaufmann. It was also his decision to let Behrens go, although Behrens wasn't that impressive. It was his decision as well to lend out Jordan Sibacho, although Sibache wasn't very impressive with us as well. So you kind of start to wonder whether our system and approach is the problem of or the quality of our strikers. And it's probably a bit of both, because Behrens was flourishing when he got some really great crosses. but he was out of form as well at some at a certain point. With Bedia, I cannot really say what kind of a striker he is. Mikkel Kaufmann, I don't think he even started in the 24 matches that we had this season. So I don't know what's the plan there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the unenviable position of watching two clubs who don't seem to be able to sign strikers, or then can sign strikers, but then don't play strikers. And as Baz said, sometimes you see a striker play for about 15 minutes. Sunderland are now on their third manager. We tried playing with strikers at the weekend and lost 1-0. But for those interested, we have a friendly cup against Norwich and we won that 3-2. So my weekend wasn't all misery. Although as a Benfica fan up in Porto, they suffered a 5-0 reverse. So my weekend, footballing-wise, didn't get any better than either Kyle or Mark's. I did enjoy that goal that you conceded, Mark, actually. Sorry to bring an Oxford goal, but very rare you see the corner flag be hit, the ball stay in play, and then the other team go up and score a goal.
Yeah, it's going about as well for Oxford as it was going for Union a few weeks ago, to be quite honest at the moment. I think, that was a sign of the times at the moment that happened, to be fair.
A sign of the times. Well, we won't do too many more sort of pop culture references, but I am well aware that was a Harry Styles song, but I'm sure that was just an accident by Mark because he leaves those references to me usually. Baz, let's go to tennis next, and more specifically, tennis balls. So we're talking about, of course, the protests that we've seen in the Bundesliga over the last few weeks. Not something we've really touched on the podcast yet, but as we've got a few minutes to wrap up and before we maybe close talking about the managerial situation at Union, it's been a strange time. You've been on the terraces, you've witnessed some of those delays firsthand. First of all, what's the feeling been like on the terraces when you get those long delays?
Well, we didn't come unprepared, let's put it like that. So, I mean, it got, I wouldn't even say worse, it got longer every home game. I think it started with some 5-minute delay, and then I think it was the Heidenheim game where the game ended at like 6 or 6:10 p.m., you know, when you had to actually convince your partners that you didn't go for a shag around the corner, but it was actually the match that was delayed.
Most people just go for a pint after the game, but if that's what you do, Baz, that's interesting.
Well, the extra pint it would then have been in that case, of course. Anyway, I wasn't annoyed. Personally, I don't think Mark Jameson was annoyed. I think there was a lot of understanding for the actions. It was very disciplined as well against Heidenheim. They knew exactly where the limit was because, of course, they didn't want the game to be cancelled. And everybody was just pretty relaxed and accepting that that's, I guess, the price that you have to pay if you really want to put pressure on probably the dumbest and most intransparent process that I've seen in the last couple of years of the DFL.
I like the way you only limit that to the last couple of years. Does someone want to just maybe explain as well sort of where we're at the moment with the situation, if you like? So, I mean, we had one lot of investors pull out, and then obviously there came a time when the protesters won, right? Or did they? They've won one of the battles, but whether they've won the war or not is probably a different matter, I guess.
I mean, there's basically a PR battle going on now of the DFL trying now to influence the debate and trying to explain to everyone that it wasn't all that bad and no bad intentions and stuff like that. I think that the fans definitely won this battle. They actually won two battles, and it's shown that there isn't a big support for that this amongst fans, but also not amongst most of the clubs, I actually think. And there is no general idea where they actually want to go with the DFL, with the Bundesliga, how to market it internationally, what innovation actually means. It's a pretty big mess. And my guess is that it's going to come back, this discussion, in one way or the other, but not next year, because, I mean, these two decisions have been, like, I guess only 6 or 7 or 8 months apart. So, yeah, for now, the battle is won. I don't know what's next or what would be the wise next step. There was in Kicker, there was an article about the pandemic. And there was actually a work group, as they call it, in Germany, about the future of football, you know. And we knew during the pandemic that they said they had to be more modest, you know, and that they couldn't have too many losses anymore, financial losses and stuff like that. Let's get back to basics. And then, of course, you see these ridiculous plans. But there were actually, from this working group, a lot of proposals that would actually make sense. And the proposal of Kicker was actually just go back to the drawing board, have a look at what you worked out 3 or 4 years ago. And then please start a genuine dialogue with the people, with the fans, and see whether you can find a middle ground. For now, I think the DFL just made a big mess of it. And there's a lot of bad blood.
So yeah, Mark, obviously you're on the terraces as well with Baz. So I'm sure you managed to go and get an extra pint in or something like that, or just enjoyed the great camaraderie on the terrace with your mates. In terms of kind of this idea of trying to make money on the back of marketing rights, and then generally owned by people who have interests in the Middle East, and generally these people have interests in other leagues. It all does sound quite murky when you read about it, doesn't it?
Yeah, as Baz said, I think the way that they went about it was the wrong way of doing it. The one word that seemed to come up all the time in the past weeks was a lack of transparency in the situation. The fact that a club could vote could vote one way or say one thing and vote another way, and nobody knew what was going on in general. The only thing that was seemingly sure was the fact that the DFL wanted to push through this investor program almost against all odds. But yeah, Baz has summed it up more or less perfectly, the situation on the ground in Germany. I think that ultimately you can sum it up in one sentence, that if Martin Kind from Hanover is for something, then to be on the safe side, just be against it, and you'll be on the right side morally, and you'll be on the right side just in general footballing terms. So that would be my takeaway from that. But in the end, I wasn't, as Bad said, I wasn't annoyed. I supported it. It was annoying. The extra, just the waiting around that first half with the injury. There was also blood injury as well in that first half. And my God, that first half lasted a long time. It was knackering almost watching it. I don't know what the players thought about it. But ultimately, it has been a success in that sense, in that the DFL is, first of all, it's off the table. But ultimately, disruptive, yes, but it was peaceful. It was impactful. It was a unifying force among Germany, and it had the right result. So from that, no complaints from my side.
And I think from a creativity point of view, there were some superb antics by some of the ultras. I mean, we had flares brought on by little remote control cars and all sorts, Kyle. So I mean, it was a great spectacle to watch, maybe from afar, for the likes of me and you as well. I mean, when you're watching protests on the TV, we're generally in the warmth of our pub or apartment. So. It was great fun to see, Kyle, and obviously a very important issue that, for now the battle has been won, which is great.
Yeah, it was almost before the other private equity firm pulled out. I was wondering what was going to come next week. You know, would flares come in on drones or something like that? The God, the only thing Rostock have ever done well was those cars that come into the pitch. Everything else that comes out here is not worth repeating on this podcast. But look, the things that the Bundesliga were trying to sell, or the DFL were trying to sell, as this positive stuff that could come from the private equity, like digital media and so on. That's, you don't need money to make the digital media and stuff like that for the league better. Part of it was clamping down on illegal streaming, then make your product more accessible so that people don't have to resort to illegal streaming. Obviously, I'm the UK. We have this problem of the 3 o'clock blackout. You cannot watch a game that kicks off Saturday 15:30 in Germany. That's how it is. That rule will probably change in the not too distant future, because the demand is there for games to be on the telly. Most pubs end up showing, you know, Sky Sports News, where it's just a load of guys talking about watching games instead of just showing the games. Things like that would change, but you know, develop a streaming service and stuff like that. You don't need private equity to do that. It's not, if the League of Ireland could do it, and you guys watching this, I have a League of Ireland game on in the background. If they can do it, then the Bundesliga can. Like, because that is a league that, you know, there's no money in it compared to what's in the Bundesliga. You know, the Dritte Liga will have more money. There'll be Regionalliga sides with bigger budgets than all teams in the League of Ireland. But they can show every single game live on a streaming platform that's a reasonable price point. You don't need massive amounts of capital to go and do that. And on the marketing side of it, you know, the league is terrible at marketing itself, and this has been an issue for years. It's got a marketing strategy that maybe was designed in the 90s, and they've kept it. You know, it's not designed for the social media age. Anytime there's a highlight, and the Bundesliga has lots of them. I think back to like when we got promoted, or things like that, or HSV getting relegated for scenes on the pitch, but also tremendous goals and stuff like that. If someone were to post that, you know, they take a clip and post that, then it'll get a copyright struck and taken down on social media. I think to other sporting things, that sporting leagues and stuff like that market themselves a bit better. One example that maybe our audience isn't familiar with, but maybe saw on social media last week, was there was a finish in NASCAR in America, and three cars finished within 7 thousandths of a second in a race, and that highlight was everywhere, and it was on TV in the States and all across social media. And this is, you know, people that don't like the sport like me referring to this in conversations with me, because I talk's a trait. I like that. I like NASCAR. But that's, and you get people that are then interested in a sport. That comes on the back of like having a Netflix series where, you know, people get to understand the teams and characters about the sport. We've spoke about this with the likes of Sunderland Till I Die and stuff like that. There's things you can do to market the sport instead of just copyright striking and leaving it to traditional media to market what makes the Bundesliga great. Because frankly, what makes the Bundesliga great does not translate onto a newspaper page. It doesn't translate into a highlights package that goes out, you know, on a Monday here, or you know, sports show or sports studio in Germany. That's not what makes the league great. It's, you know, the thing. It's the involvement of the fans. It's the to the point of these protests, where you know, sort of highlights of the league were these toy cars going about with flares on it, you know, to make a point. It's the fan scene. It's the Union fans staying behind 40 minutes after the game at the weekend, even though we lost 2-0. It's things like these that make it great. And these things, just like I said, they don't translate to newspaper columns and things like that. And that's, you don't need private capital to sell the league. You can sell the league much better and bring in much more revenue than any private equity could if you literally just did your fucking job. Just market the league. Market the league in a 21st century style and it'll be fine. But as if the Bundesliga would you know, do anything sensible like that.
No, 100%, Kylan. Yeah, I mean, the sort of points you're making there, basically it's a league that has decision making at the core that is being run by people who just do not understand not just the generation of fans who are watching now, but what the next generation of fans are going to need. And they are going to want to see instant goals, instant highlights, video package. They want to see fan stuff. They want to see real stuff. And that makes them feel uncomfortable because the league don't want to show protests with tennis balls coming on the pitch or whatever. But you know what? That's sometimes what makes a sport actually fun. It's those quirky things that maybe are going against the grain. And then it's a bit like when you first got kind of the admins of Twitter, who actually were at the very start of Twitter, club admins were quite funny. And then they went through a whole period where they became very, very sterile and all the same because everybody had an admin and everyone had to just be normal. And then again, they broke away a little bit and started being a little bit more quirky. A story for another day, but fully agreed that they don't need 100 billion. They just need a change in mindset if they want to market the league any better. Friday Night Lights coming up. We're away at Stuttgart. Always do enjoy the Friday Night Light games. Maybe not always great for the away fans, of course, but there we are. And then following that, before the international break, we'll be hosting Werder Bremen, who, I think they're only about 8 points above us now. So, I mean, it's got one very tough away game and one potentially winnable home game there. What's your thoughts on those two, Mark?
When you look at last season, we went to Stuttgart, beat them in Stuttgart. Materazzo was sacked on the back of it. And we played a good game that day and deserved. And the difference between then and now in terms of Stuttgart is unbelievable. It's like night and day.
Well, they are twice as good as us this season because they've got 50 points and we've got 25. So, yeah, you are completely right.
Leverkusen are having a season for the ages. They're having a stellar season. I don't think even they are going to fuck this one up. But in terms of impressiveness, only maybe Heidenheim come close to what Stuttgart have achieved this season. If they get to the Champions League after looking down and out last year, then they deserve everything. They deserve everything that they're going to get. Really, I do. The very, very, very impressive team with a very impressive attack. Here we go back again to our thing. Where are our central strikers? Well, they have two of them, and they're both brilliant at the moment. Both in form. That's going to be a tough one. Let's be under absolutely no illusions. It's away. It's just going to be a horrible game. Do I think we can get a point? Yes, surely. But we're up against it in that one. I have to say, I don't think we're going to get anything out of that. The following game, Werder Bremen, who we always traditionally do well against, of course. I think that looking at the games after that, where we have a run of four quite tough games home and away, I think we really have to win that to keep any sort of wolves from the door in terms of relegation. I don't think we're going to get sucked in down there again. But certainly 3 points out of those two games would do very nicely to dispelling those fears.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I actually miscalculated. We're only 5 points behind Werder Bremen. We're 8 points behind Hoffenheim in seventh. So I'm sure some people are still dreaming of Europe. But as Mark says, Kyle, we need a couple of we need some points on the board for those tough games after the international break. Are they going to come from those two games?
You hope so. Certainly the Bremen game, you know, win your home games and worry about the away games afterwards. But Stuttgart are maybe not the beast that we came up against at the start of the season, but they're still a fantastic side. And you would almost put money on them finishing above Bayern at this point, which is a ridiculous thing to say if you're thinking this time last year, or this time, you know, even a few weeks later last year. Like, the turnaround has been fantastic, and they'll be doing well to keep a hold of Guirassy in the summer, with his release clause rumoured to be under €20 million. That's if it gets you into the Champions League, then it's worth it in the end, but that would be a big loss. But going away, it's probably a free hit. You know, go see what you can do. We have tended to have Stuttgart's number since the playoff. You know, that game in October was the only time they've beat us since the playoff, or well, even before. They didn't beat us in the playoff, but you know, it's going to be incredibly tough, and it's not one that I'm expecting much from on Friday night. Bremen game, on the other hand, they've not been in the best of form. They somehow are in the European fight. I feel like they've just by stealth are in the European race. Out of nowhere, you know, they were sitting in seventh last couple of weeks before this weekend or the weekend before. A good side, but a side that in the sort of general form we're in, take away last weekend and the odd mistake against Hoffenheim, but if we can recapture that form that we had before those games, that we should go in with a good chance of getting 3 points, and then that kind of sets us up. After that, we've got 8 games, and we're going to have a tough run of 4 games. Augsburg's in there, and Augsburg, as always, are the shit that doesn't flush. Just when you think they're going to go down, they beat a team 6-0 out of nowhere. But it's and then after that, then there's some opportunity to pick up points, but you don't want to be dragged back into that relegation race at that point, because then you start to panic and stuff. So getting, you know, 3 points at least out of these 2 games would be massive in terms of ensuring that we're in the league, of course. You know, I said last time out, 34, let's get to 34 and we're probably all right from there. And then I can still dream. You know, the seventh to 15th in the Bundesliga, they're all about the same. You know, the teams are, there's no one that is miles ahead of anybody else there. So we can dream of dining in Europe and breathing that fresh European air once more in the Conference League next season. But let's get 3 points out of these 2 games first.
Yeah, I mean, be quite happy with just a season off European football personally, just to replenish the bank balance. But Baz, 2 tough games, really, I think. And you're probably, maybe, dare I say, a little bit like me, in the sense you have more concerns that we could get sucked in. I mean, I can very much see us getting 0 to 1 point from these 2 games. Then you've got the international break, got a lot of tough fixtures coming up. We're 8 points above Cologne. Goal difference. Yeah, I mean, I think you'd probably be saying we have to win one of those 2 games. Do you think we can? Are you as worried as me?
I'm not super worried. I have one worry, and that is the away game in Cologne. And that is one where we should go with a buffer of more than 4 or 5 points, because if it's only 4 or 5 points and we have to go there, and I think it's 3 games before the end of the season, then that is like a really, 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 really tough one. And that's definitely something that we do not want to happen. I think it's realistic as well against Werder Bremen, by the way, to get a result at home. We've usually looked pretty good against them as well. And it seems to be a team that is giving away quite a lot of chances. But it's not clear cut. So we are still in a risky situation. I don't think we're going to get anything in Stuttgart. It's on International Women's Day, though. So to make it a bit more tempting for the Berlin away fans who have a day off. So if they could actually find a train that's running or a plane that's flying there, they could actually visit it. Yes, this country has managed to get two strikes together on one day. I'm not super worried, to be honest, but I do agree with you. We need to get 3 points actually out of those two games. And it's probably the one against Bremen, which is going to decide whether we will make that or not.
Well, we'll soon find out how we do, because Friday night will be fast approaching as you listen to this podcast. We've been Matushka's Right Peg. Before we go, though, on the subject of women's football, sadly, a couple of our group did go to the game and witness the 5-0 demolition of our friends at Hertha Berlin in the quarterfinals of the cup, in the Women's Cup. Unfortunately, they, due to work commitments, couldn't come on and tell us about that experience. But safe to say, we do have one eye on the Women's League. And if anyone out there wants to come on and talk about the Union Women's League, the team, and the cup games, etc., they would be more than welcome. But for now, this has been episode 35 of Matushka's Right Peg. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, gentlemen in the studio. And Eisen Union.